This is Pittsburgh Pop, Tim Benz and Rob Owen with you this week. Thank you for joining us. It is your weekly slice of pop culture here at Trib Live. Rob, you can read him. TV Talk, TV Q&A weekly at Trib Live. You can check me out daily. Breakfast with Benz on the sports side. Glad you're with us for this week. And we'll start off, Rob, by looking at what is believed to be, and I don't know how else it couldn't be after the way it played out, believed to be the last Ted Lasso episode. What'd you think? And again, we will have spoilers here for people. Yes. So just as a heads up, since we're talking about the perceived series finale, it has to be, right? There's no way they can go around this, correct?
I mean, I think there's lots of ways they can go around it, actually.
And still call it Ted Lasso or have it be a spinoff?
Well, I think there will be spinoffs is what I think will happen. And could Jason Sudeikis make a guest appearance? Of course he could. I mean, I actually thought that Krim's book title, The Lasso Way, would be a great title for a spinoff series. You keep the lasso in it, you do an in-universe show, and they set up a number of different ways it could go. You could follow Roy and the existing team, or Keeley proposed a women's team that you could follow potentially. Then there's also the question of that montage at the end. Was that real? Or was that something Ted was dreaming? Because then you see him wake up on the plane. So what of that was real and what
I didn't like that
Ted's dream state. I don't. As far as the whole thing goes, you know, I have enough residual warmth for the characters and the show in its first season that I'm not going to be cranky about the finale. It did all the things the finale is supposed to do. Even if, you know, they botched the whole Nate storyline because he's suddenly somehow back with them. And it did not make sense the way that whole thing came back together after the bad stuff that he had done. There was a problem this season with a lot of stuff happening that you didn't see. You didn't see Ted do his resignation. You didn't see a whole bunch of things that happened off camera, which was very, very.
I didn't like what they decided to do there to leave that open-ended about was it a dream or not. To me, leaving guessing doesn't equate to good writing. Sometimes good writing can leave you guessing, but it doesn't invert exactly the same way. That doesn't strike me as creative. That sort of strikes me, honestly, to be lazy. And if you are wrapping things up, I don't know if you want that much ambiguity. Like setting up for a sequel or setting up for a spinoff, to me, does not equate to good writing. Leaving things ended on purpose, actually, I think is the opposite. So I didn't like the is it a dream or not question hanging over the end of the series.
I will agree that I did not like the is it a dream or not, but I didn't mind the montage that we saw at the end. I think it's okay to leave some things open, to set up the possibility of a women's team, to set up, following Roy. I think the problem was that leaving the impression that it could have been a dream. Like, I'm okay that their lives go on, that there's some setting the stage for what could come next. I think the big mistake was the Ted jerking awake on the plane.
Exactly.
Which then called everything into question as to whether it was real or not. To me, if you had just excised the Ted waking up on the plane, it would have been fine.
Or he could have been gazing out the window as all this other stuff was going on.
Yes, that would have been fine too, because then it would not have taken you into, oh, is this a dream territory? And I assume they did that because they don't have a concrete plan and they want all their options to be open. So they want to be able to do the things potentially that were suggested, but they also want to have their cake and eat it too and be like, no, we're not going to go down that path. We're going to go down a different path. And therefore we have to leave it a possibility that it was a dream and not what actually happens in the future.
So Ted Lasso is wrapping up. Now let's get to something that's starting up. Let's talk about The Idol, which premiered on Sunday night on HBO. What'd you think?
You didn't watch it, did you?
No, I did not watch it. No.
Yeah, you're better off. So this is a series that is written by the guy who does Euphoria for HBO and also The Weeknd. And it premiered at, this is really weird, okay? So they showed the first two episodes of the show at Cannes. It got pretty critically savaged there. And then they refused to send out screeners to press in America, even though it had already been reviewed by American press at Cannes. And initially they wouldn't say whether they were sending it out. Like, I didn't really care if I reviewed it or not, but you know what? You're supposed to send out your stuff for review, and they didn't do it. I assume they were just trying to limit the damage and not have more negative reviews floating about. So this is a story of a Britney Spears-like pop star who has had a breakdown, and she's attempting to stage a comeback, and then she meets this guy at the club, played by The Weeknd, who's kind of scuzzy and gross, but she likes him, I guess, because of that. And evidently, he's gonna like become a Svengali and manipulate her and get into her orbit. The show had a lot of titillating stuff going on that I can't even really talk about on a family podcast. But I found it mostly boring. Like, I didn't care about her. It's a lot of slow, attempting to be sexy, but not really sexy stuff. The only part of the show I like is at the very beginning, you see all these people around her. You see her manager, played by Hank Azaria, who's rocking a French accent for reasons. You see Jane Addams, an actress I always liked, as a record company executive. When the focus is not on the pop star, but on kind of this coterie of people that she surrounds herself with, I was kind of intrigued. Like, that's a show I'd be interested in watching, is sort of their manipulation and how they use her to their own ends. But following the pop star herself, no, that was super dull.
Well, I'm a big Hank Azaria guy, so I'll be on board with you on that one.
Yeah, no, that's the only part of the show that I thought was any good at all. So I won't be at all surprised if this is a one season and done. And it's a very short 5-episode season at that.
Now, there's a new guy on The Bachelorette, too. Is that right? And he's got local ties?
Yes, there is. So we have a local guy, Tanner Cordat, a 30-year-old mortgage lender from Pittsburgh, who will be one of 25 men vying for the affections of Charity Lawson. This is the 20th season of The Bachelorette. He works in the mortgage business. He's also a trainer for Leslie Sansone's Pittsburgh-based Walk at Home online fitness program, and he claims he is 100% husband material. A person who is extremely close with his family and hopes to find a relationship as special as the one his parents have. So that starts on June 26th on ABC. They're not making him available for interviews in advance of when the show airs, only when he gets kicked off.
Do we think he's the gambling favorite? What do you think?
Oh, I have no idea. I mean, there are people who spend their lives getting spoilers behind the scenes of reality competitions like that. And I think Spoiler Steve, Reality Steve is his name. He probably has a better read on that than I do. But, it's always one of these things where they announce there are 25, but there are not 25 weeks in the show. So that means that at some point she's going to cut like 10 people at
Yeah,
once.
it's
So,
like training camp roster cutdowns that they used to have in the NFL. Comes at you in waves.
So does he even make it beyond that? See, after June 26th, I suppose.
What about Fox's Stars on Mars? That hits tonight, right?
Yes. Tonight is Stars on Mars. It is, my 8-year-old watched the screener with me yesterday, and he was like, "It's just like Survivor." Well, it is, except dumber, because there's not actually any question of survival in this, because they are on fake Mars. A mining town in South Australia is where they filmed this thing. It's also where they filmed a lot of Mars set sci-fi movies. And the stars, quote unquote, are more like semi-household names. You've got Lance Armstrong, Ariel Winter, who was the girl with glasses on Modern Family, Portia, somebody who's from a Real Housewives show. Tom, somebody from Vanderpump Rules, who's involved in some scandal there that I know exists but haven't been following. Adam Rippon, who else is on it? Oh, the guy who played McLovin. I'm super bad. He's one of them. So, like I said, semi-starred. So they get put into this fake Martian colony, and they're inside the base, and then they have to do missions, and then at the end they have to vote one person out. So yes, structurally it's similar to Survivor, but you know, there is no danger. There are no Martians that are going to get them. I thought it was innocuous, dumb, but you know, occasionally entertaining.
Christopher Mintz Plasse is
Yes, that's
McLovin's name.
McLovin.
Yeah, and
Yeah.
he's buddies, or at least he was, with Santonio Holmes. Did you know that?
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh,
He's
but there are two football players on the show.
Oh, who's that?
Former Seahawks, Richard Sherman and Marshawn Lynch.
Oh, well, they might be the most entertaining of the bunch
They
then.
I think they might be. There's very much a little bit of a buddy comedy duo going here. So it's like I say, dumb but innocuous.
Last thing, the DGA made a deal, so they're not going to have a second strike. Is that correct?
Well, not a second strike with directors. The
Oh,
jury is
second
still out.
strike. Sorry, in parallel with the writers then.
Right, but the jury is still out on SAG-AFTRA. So the actors could still go out. The DGA, the directors, came to a deal. It seems like it is a deal that probably the contours of it would not make it acceptable to the writers. I also think the writers have more complex issues. Directors, you have one person directing a movie or an episode of a TV show. Writers, it's, you know, a team effort, and I think that makes it a much more complicated thing than a director who parachutes in and parachutes out of a project, particularly when it's TV. So yes, the directors have a deal. I don't think that necessarily, the last time that sort of foreshadowed the writers coming back to the table and getting a deal, I'm not convinced that will happen this time, particularly if the actors go out on strike. Their contract expires the end of June, and there's been a lot of saber rattling there that makes me think that they are gearing up to go out. So we'll have to keep an eye on that and see what happens.
Okay, Rob, TV Talk, TV Q&A, what do you have for this week?
Let's see. TV talk. We've got a new Kaley Cuoco series, which I don't think I'm allowed to say much about. I think it's still under embargo, but I will say that I enjoy it. So that's coming up in TV talk. And then in TV Q&A, I have a question this week about a news anchor and their glasses and why, oh, why do those glasses keep changing?
That makes me, as somebody who sometimes wears glasses on Channel 11 and sometimes do people actually notice stuff like that? I
They
guess they
clearly do,
do.
Tim. I don't. But viewers are more observant than
All right. As for me at Breakfast with Ben's, make sure you check out our posts this week. We'll be again at Steelers OTAs working on a piece about the secondary for later this week and more about the hire of Kyle Dubas as the president of hockey ops for the Pittsburgh Penguins. We'll have a column on that posted tomorrow. Rob and I will be back next week for more right here on Pittsburgh Pop, your weekly slice of pop culture here at Trib Live. Have a good week, everybody.